I think President Putin sees these governments falling sooner rather than later. And when they fall, everything changes. What are you going to get after Merz? What are you going to get after Macron? What are you going to get after Starmer? You're going to get people who are far more nationalistic. They are all going to be Britain first, France first, Germany first. In fact, in Germany, you're going to get Germany only. We're sick of the whole thing. And then there are going to be tough times inside these countries. And the same globalists that tried to drag everybody into war with Russia unsuccessfully, they're going to attack their own people for defending their countries against the migrants they don't want. I mean, this is where we're headed. We're going to see convulsive change in the West. It's going to happen here, too. It's going to take longer to get here, but it's going to happen everywhere in the West. The West is going to turn inward.
And you know, to your point there about the current leadership in the West who want to avoid that outcome, but also are unwilling to acknowledge reality, they're continuing to spread this information that Russia's coming West. And holy cow, we have to keep this going. This was in the Economist, the British newspaper Economist, where they're talking about that all these provocations are coming in from Russia to the edge. It says how they're blowing up tankers in Europe to drone sightings in Belgium, how Putin is pushing NATO to a cliff. Interesting the way they characterize this. This is from the article. Russia has long been accused of interfering in European affairs, but the issue was thrust back into focus in September when nearly two dozen drones crossed over into Poland amid a large-scale Russian drone attack into Ukraine. Days later, jets violated Estonia's airspace as Russia concluded major drills in Belarus. Subsequent activity near the border has forced Europeans to close airports and borders, causing major disruptions and exposing vulnerability. This was actually quite a long article, and they went on many things that say that there's been some railroad sabotage going on that the Poles claim that are Russian. All kinds of things happening, some in Germany, some factories that have been blown up and strange fires, et cetera. And look, Doug, I don't know the reality of how much Russia is doing some of this, but it makes sense that they would to me, because what is absent from this article or any of the discussions is the fact that Europe is sending billions of dollars to help Ukraine kill Russians. They're sending long-range missiles and drones into Russia to hit their oil infrastructure. They're having economic warfare on Russia. What do they think is going to happen in response?
Well, two things. First of all, keep in mind that most of the money is stolen. There's a reason that Zelensky has over $1 billion in his bank accounts. Remember, two members of his government and inner circle, Mindich, and I've forgotten the other one's name, they have now fled to Israel. Because you cannot be, as a Jew, extradited from Israel, brought anywhere and placed on trial. I'm sure Zelensky may well decide to do the same thing, given the fact that he's also Jewish. These people are running Ukraine, and they're destroying it. They're running it into the ground. So you can give them all the money you want, and at least 50% of it will just vanish. It'll vanish into various black markets and into people's bank accounts. Ukrainian army is no less corrupt than the rest of the society. We could spend hours talking about the corruption in Ukraine. So anything you send there is going to be wasted and stolen. The second part of this, though, is very important. Most of those claims that have been made have been debunked. They're just not accurate. They're wrong. I mean, when you pick up drones that appear to have been originally Ukrainian or Russian, and then repurpose them with microchips that are inserted from Poland, then fly them into Poland and try to create the illusion that Poland is under attack, it's pretty obvious what's happening. The Russians don't need to blow anything up in Eastern Europe right now. It doesn't make any damn difference what they do in Eastern Europe. I mean, if you're going to go after something, why not go after Rheinmetall, which is one of the largest defense contractors in the world? But Rheinmetall is not going to produce anything in any great numbers soon enough to make any difference to what happens in Ukraine. And thus far, everything the Germans have sent over there, the Russians have managed to destroy. Now, some of that is because the Ukrainians don't know what they're doing. But then again, some of it is also because those things have been employed inaccurately and ineffectively. We have just failed in the West to really study what has happened in Ukraine militarily. We think we have. We point to this, that, or the next. So the Army just announced that they're going to pay for some outrageous number of unmanned aerial systems. In fact, you and I talked about that.
Yeah.
And your point was valid. Your point was, by the time this stuff reaches any future battlefield, it'll probably be obsolete, because that's how long it takes to produce these things. And the pace with which improvements are imparted to all of these unmanned systems is absolutely incredible. So we're out of it. And none of this matters. That just take that thing and throw that in the trash. It's irrelevant. It's another last gasp to produce some evidence that they can hold up to somebody and say, see, the Russians are coming, the Russians are coming, the Russians are coming.
You know, it's interesting. You talk about things that aren't going to make any difference. We're talking about the drones that we're doing here, and what's also happening in Europe. I don't know if you saw Julian Ripka had an ex post. I think it was on the 15th, where he said, "Listen, y'all are all just fooling yourselves." He actually called it out from the West. He said, especially the Ukrainian general staff, the Ukrainian government, and the European governments are all focused on the wrong thing. They're ignoring the fact that Ukraine is going to lose strategically. He said it's already too late, because you haven't done the things that might have made a difference. He said instead you've been focusing on things that don't make a difference. And it was right on cue after that came out that we had French President Emmanuel Macron come in and talk about something else that won't make any difference, and that is 100 fighters, which, by the way, will take 10 years to actually get all on site there. What do you make of this? And is this just the same thing as the Patriots that we're talking about, which won't even get there in any kind of order in long before it'll or after it would make any difference on the battlefield?
Let's put it this way. In early March, late February 1943, Stalingrad fell on the 2nd of February. 4 weeks later, Hitler flies to his Eastern Front headquarters, not far from a place called Poltava, which has interesting historic meaning because that's where the Swedes were destroyed in 1709 by the Russians. Now, the reason I'm bringing this up is there was a meeting there, and he brought all the four-star equivalents in the German army on the Eastern Front into this room, along with large numbers of three stars. And Albert Speer had sat down with Milch, who was the chief of the Air Force, and Guderian, who at the time was the Inspector General of Armored Forces, and they put together a presentation. The presentation is very straightforward. The presentation says, we have limited resources and limited time. Think about that. Limited resources, limited time. We need to stop producing all of these things. He went down the line. Stop producing these V-2 rockets. It's never going to come to fruition soon enough to make any difference to the outcome of the war. Sound familiar? Stop producing these giant assault guns, 152-millimeter assault guns that the artillery loves. Forget it. It's a waste of money. We need to do basically three to four things. Number one, put all of our resources, all of our money into jet fighters. Hello? Does that make sense? Sure. Build jet fighters. Nobody can match us. They already had heat-seeking missiles to the damn things. You name it, they had it. So that's where we need to go, number one. Number two, we need to stop building all these different tank models. Okay, we pick one tank model, and that's what we build. Then we build the assault gun. This was the 75-millimeter long-barreled assault gun. It was, you've seen it. There's no turret on it. It's sort of a fixed gun. Well, they managed to destroy 30, 40,000 tanks with that gun on the Eastern Front. He said, that's what we do. And then we'll have transport for the infantry. They've got to be mobile. You know, we'll use half tracks and various things, but that's it. That's all we build. That's where we put our force, you know, all of our resources. And Hitler said, well, generals, what do you think? And they all objected, because they all had a dog in somebody else's fight. Oh, you can't take that away from us. Oh, that we don't want that, and we don't want this, and so forth. So then Hitler, being the politician he was, turns to Guderian, and Milch is sitting there and says, see, how can I do what you want me to do when my generals won't agree with you? So the rest is history. Now, you take somebody like Michael Howard or any number of distinguished historians have pointed to that meeting and said, if you'd done things differently then, right then, the war could have gone on for three or four more years. That's how important the decision-making was. There has never been a coherent military strategy for Ukraine. Never. Remember, you started this, and you started to talk about, well, look what's happened over time. All these years have passed. Europeans say this, we say this, we'll send Patriots. There's no strategy. In the absence of a strategy, you know, it's the old story. If you don't know where you're going, any road will take you to your destination. Well, that's what's happened in Ukraine. The destination has been reached. It's called total destruction. It's over. And the longer this lasts, the only outcome will be more dead Ukrainians, more destruction of whatever the infrastructure is that's left, whether it's the energy grid, electrical grid, doesn't matter. Everything will be destroyed and there will be nothing left. Now, perhaps that's Zelensky's secret goal. I don't know. But my point is, it's over. It's been over for some time. You know, draw the right conclusions and end this thing. But for the reasons we're discussing, the globalists cannot give it up. And remember, their populations aren't dying. So the hope is that the globalists can precipitate or provoke or evoke a response from the Russians that will kill some of their citizens. And their hope is then everyone will get mad and do something. I mean, it reminds me of Churchill during the Second World War in late 1940. The German Air Force, whether it was deliberate or not, I don't remember, but they actually struck the shipyards in Glasgow, Scotland. And Churchill celebrated. This is wonderful. We'll finally get the Scots on board for the war, because people in Scotland didn't want to go to war. Certainly not against Germany. They did that once before, and it killed hundreds of thousands of their people. So they weren't interested in doing it again. That's where the globalists are right now. They would like the Russians to do something that can then become a catalyst in their minds for real resistance and real wartime thinking in their own countries against Russia. It's not going to happen.
And you know, that's further bolstered by, first of all, what Gary was showing you just a second ago. I actually thought at first that video was an AI, because, you know, he's grinning there, how happy they are and smiling. I thought it was one of those fake videos, which we've seen some. Turns out, no, it's quite true. And then when Macron went to the microphones subsequent to that, he wanted to talk about, you know, where this was going. And just tell me if this has any relationship to reality nearing the four-year mark of this war.
Russia has independently chosen the path of war. Nothing justified the war. No real threat, only fakes. Through a complete disregard for the truth, with reflexes and instincts characteristic of a state that cannot come to terms with its own history, imperialist and neo-colonial instincts. Today, only Russia has decided to continue this war and even intensify it. You have been constantly demonstrating your real readiness to enter into a truce since May, and all that can be said, all the efforts of recent months, everything is ready to move towards this truce. Only Russia continues the war.
I mean, that's about as Orwellian as you can get, that only Russia wants to continue the war. They had no justification. And this poor little Volodymyr Zelensky next to him, he's the only one that wants to end it. What do you make of that?
Well, there's one other point that needs to be made. The other thing, in addition to the arguments and the rhetoric, which we can characterize as fake, we can also point to the money that he's talking about, which is also fake. And that is the final straw that will break the camel's back. We are in a fight right now in the United States with the help of our European allies to defend to the bitter end the dollar's reserve currency status, because that's how the billionaires became billionaires. We live in financialized economies. It's true for Europe. It's true here. We don't produce much of anything. So how do we make money? It's called transaction fees. It's called financial instruments. And that's how most of your billionaires who currently are shaping policy here in the United States have made their money. They are going to fight tooth and nail to keep that reserve dollar status, but it's failing. It's failing very, very badly because no one wants it. The dollar is something that people don't want to have to do business in any longer. And so incrementally, each passing week, each passing month, as we move from year to year, fewer and fewer people are doing business in dollars. The Saudis, who we think of as strategic partners, are now doing business with China exclusively in yuan. And the yuan is now establishing its connectivity to gold. And gold is going to become the standard for BRICS. We're in a lot of trouble. So we're on a very short tether, if you will. We can't go on much longer than we have thus far. And I think that's also behind all the ridiculous statements and rhetoric by Macron. And by the way, in France, I think his approval rating is probably almost as bad as Donald Trump's. I think Donald Trump is hovering around 30%, and I suspect that's where Macron is. I'm sure that's where Starmer is, and Merz is not far behind. All of these people are on the road to extinction as political leaders. There's no question about it.
As it turns out, not everybody in Europe is this delusional. And in fact, everybody in Europe didn't used to be, even among some of these major powers, didn't used to be. There was an interesting interview with Viktor Orban a couple of days ago where he, first of all, was kind of lamenting about some of his relationships with previous versions of leaders. You've talked about Chancellor Merz a lot. Well, he was talking about Angela Merkel. And he's first of all started off and said, we had a lot of disagreements. One was over the Green Power, the Green New Deal, their version of it. Another was over immigration, which you pointed out a minute ago. He said, we are 100% apart on that. He said, but the thing that I did value about her is that she would sit down and listen and consider options, and they would actually act rationally. And then he added this.
Strategically, what is the interest of Europe? What is the relation to Russia? I almost 100% agreed with her. There was moments at the European Council when she was the only one and me who argued on the same platform for peace and cooperation. So I think I follow what's going on in Germany. So I'm not a stupid guy. I know what's going on. And now it's quite fashionable to say bad things on her. It's not fair. It's not fair. She did good things for Germany and good things for Europe, and of course some bad things as well. So to be correct or fair is important in politics. And on the Russian issue, she was right.
So what do you think about? Was Angela Merkel right?
Well, Angela Merkel did do some things well. There's no question about it. But I probably would be harder on Merkel than Prime Minister Orban. Orban is telling the truth, at least insofar as Merkel was there when in Bucharest when they had the meeting in 2008 and pointed to the expansion of NATO and trying to bring Ukraine in as a serious mistake. She said trying to bring Georgia and Ukraine in to NATO is going to provoke Russia. Well, everybody that knew anything about Russia, knew anything about Eastern Europe, was well aware that that would happen. I mean, we heard that from George Kennan back in the 1990s. That's not news. It's just that people chose to ignore it. Even Kissinger, who is about as duplicitous as anybody who's ever lived, made that comment, and he was correct on that occasion. So I think he's making some good points. But the point is that she was also the architect of Germany's destruction, because of not just the Green New Deal, but the mass migration, invasion of Germany. And all you have to do is look at Germany's cities now, the places where they're ensconced, these vast numbers of people, the enormous cost to the German taxpayer, the dramatic rise in criminality, little boys being raped and murdered and so forth. And these things are not even allowed to be reported in the press anymore. She deserves the lion's share of credit for pushing that. And again, she's another co-conspirator with von der Leyen. Von der Leyen was the defense minister, and she was a disaster. She was the one that was insisting that armored fighting vehicles be developed and built to accommodate pregnant women in uniform going into battle. I mean, I can't conceive of anything dumber and more stupid than that. But that was von der Leyen, and that was blessed by Merkel, and von der Leyen is now running the European Union now. I don't think she's going to last much longer, because I think everybody's had it up to here, with the European Union. Here's what needs to be understood. Before everything ends, well, let's put it this way. This war in Ukraine is lost, and that's going to become patently obvious. And the Russians are going to be victorious. They're going to dictate the terms under which the map is redrawn and new actors emerge. But there's something even more important than what happens in Ukraine. And I predict that Germany will walk out of NATO and walk out of the EU, because it's the only way for Germany to liberate itself from the oppressive influence and power of the EU and NATO. remember, many of your guests have said this, and people always chuckle over it. I always thought it was deeply offensive and thought it was dead wrong. But this was the attitude in Great Britain and France and the United States, and that is NATO exists to keep the Russians out and the Germans down. Well, the Germans are finally emerging from this state of Stockholm syndrome that they've been living in for decades, where the German walks in the room and his head is bowed and says, "I'm sorry, we're bad, and we know we're bad, and how much money do you want?" That's over. The Germans have had it with that. The new generation that's coming up is sick of it. The alternative for Germany is sick of it. And this Atlantic alliance has not produced security for Germany. It's dragged Germany into a confrontation with Russia that most Germans want nothing to do with. So Germany is going to march out of the EU. It's going to march out of NATO. When that happens, that's the end of NATO and the EU, because the only way they can exist is with Germany as the linchpin, as the keystone in the edifice. Once the Germans say enough and walk, it's over. And that's where we're headed. So this entire war in Ukraine that was launched to destroy Russia and was always linked to the idea, and this goes back to the White House in 2020 when I was in there and I wrote a paper on it and it was given to the president, and he just, you know, I don't think he could even imagine it, but it was an argument against disrupting relations with Germany because of the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. And I tried to outline the hundreds of years of very profitable and productive relations between Russia and the German-speaking peoples based on an exchange of commodities, commercial relationships. And the elites actually got along very well. If you go back over the last 300 or 400 years of history involving Germany and Russia, the two world wars are anomalies. They should never have happened. And they did happen. It's tragic that they did. But I think both Germans and Russians have concluded this must not happen again. And Germany will leave the Atlantic Alliance, and it will leave the EU for these very reasons. And all the neocons that have done everything they possibly could to promote death and destruction and war in Eastern Europe and across the continent, these are the same people who have pushed these migrations, heavily funded by people like Soros and others, who couldn't wait to shove millions and millions of people into Europe who are not Europeans, will never be Europeans, cannot become Europeans, and don't want to be Europeans. They are all going to stand around and then begin to say, see, the Germans are evil. They're back at it again. They're evil because they're charting their own course. They've decided on their own future. It's a lot of nonsense. You know, there's no Nazi revival there, nor will there ever be one, in my judgment. But what you see out in eastern Ukraine, for some reason, these same neocons are happy to see these Ukrainian soldiers sport SS emblems right. In their war with Russia, which makes no sense at all. None.
Yeah, that is something that didn't get much. It did get a little bit of press, but the significance seemed to be lost on people. I guess because they're like, no, I can't acknowledge that, because then that would mean we can't support Zelensky because he seems so okay with it. But I tell you, one person that's not okay with it, and going back to that interview with Viktor Orban, he was also asked specifically about what chances does the Ukraine army, with the SS or not, what chance do they have?
European politics intellectually is very sophisticated, but what they are saying basically means that they would not like to have a peace just now. They would like to continue the war. They think, and they speak about it publicly, that we have to continue the war to support Ukraine more. The situation will improve on the front line, and we will have a better circumstances or preconditions for negotiation. Wrong, totally wrong. Not to speak about geopolitics and human dimension, economically and financially is just crazy. We finance a country which has no chance to win the war, but at the same time, there's a high level of corruption.
Yeah, now obviously that issue with corruption has exploded since he made those comments. You mentioned at the outset, one of Zelensky's right-hand men has been caught and is now somewhere in hiding. And it's still very uncertain.
He's in Israel, along with another one. They both fled to Israel. They will be safe there.
for now. If Zelensky falls, it's unclear how long they're going to protect him.
Oh, listen, I think they're going to be safe. Remember the gentleman who is a pedophile who was caught out in Las Vegas? I can't remember his name now, but it turns out he was an Israeli citizen, and he was flown immediately to Israel, where he has stayed and is safe and will never be extradited. No, I think the Jewish state will remain a haven for Jews, regardless of what they do anywhere else in the world. And that's certainly true for the two gentlemen that whose names escape me. One, I think, is Mindich or something.
Yeah, Mindich, yeah.
And the other one, I can't remember his name, but you know, at some point, Zelensky will probably pack it in and go there as well.
Well, yeah, because I was going to say, and I'm talking to some folks who are on the ground in Kiev or have access there, and they're saying he is literally at risk. This could knock him out when nothing else do it. So apparently he's not as safe as many in the West may think, even with all these announcements.
Well, a lot of people have waited for him to be subjected to the Mussolini treatment. That may yet come. Who knows? He is distant from his own population. What no one here in the West is told, and you can only hear this from people who are on the ground over there, or Poland, or in Russia. There are some Germans that will tell you this. I think one of them is named Baba. This is a German journalist. I listened to him, and he said the same thing. The population has turned decisively against this war with Russia. They know this has to end before there's anything left. That's where they're headed right now. And the other thing is that Ukrainians living in the western part of Ukraine are also coming around to understanding that whether we like it or not, that government that emerges after this war in Kiev must be friendly to Russia. If it isn't, the Russians will march all the way to where we are, right up to the border with Poland, if necessary, to secure their country. We have never recognized Russia's legitimate national security interests in Ukraine. Never done it. And we don't seem to understand, as a result, we, more than anybody else, are responsible for this bloodletting. You know, if there was a humanitarian bone in Donald Trump's body, on the basis of what's happened thus far, he would lower the boom and say, Mr. Zelensky, you're finished. You're out.
You're fired.
However, I suspect that the same billionaires that are calling the shots in Washington in terms of policy towards the Middle East and towards Iran are also calling the shots in Ukraine. And these billionaires have decided that they want Zelensky there and they want to continue doing whatever they can to harm Russia. That's their agenda. That's not an American agenda.
Yeah.
That's what the billionaires want. And I think more and more people are coming around to understanding the billionaires really are in charge. You know, they own the House, they own the Senate, they own the White House.